arachnid SCPs. There are certain things known as primal fears, or primordial fears, that, while not quite universal, are extremely common amongst most people. Fears such as fear of the dark, of heights, fire, snakes, and death. Things that are deeply ingrained into the human psyche over the past 2 million years. Fears of things that were very clear representations of danger and death, and thus antithetical to the continued survival of the human species. Spiders are another one of these primal fears, and arachnophobia is quite common, even being seen among non-human primates. The concept, however irrational it may be in modern times, of such a small creature being theoretically capable of killing you, even though it's extremely rare, is still terrifying for many. Combine that with their often unsettling appearance due to size and number of legs, and it's no surprise that spiders are a common sight in horror media. Let's take a look at a handful of SCP articles featuring arachnids in some form, from the touching to the utterly horrific. First up, we have SCP-1470, a male fringed jumping spider recovered from Queensland, Australia, which has the unique ability of communicating telepathically. 1470 is sapient, capable of communicating with other sapient beings up to 9 meters away, but does not possess any other notable differences from other fringed jumping spiders. The Queensland population of these types of spiders has already been observed to be more intelligent than other spiders in their ability to solve problems and employ unique hunting tactics to capture their prey, which mostly consists of other spiders. Due to 1470's anomalous ability to communicate, though, it's not recommended that any conclusions about the rest of its species be drawn based on conversations with 1470. 1470's communication seems to assign terms on a best-fit basis within the minds receiving the words, with terms it uses for its own body parts sometimes being adjusted automatically to make sense for human anatomy. After an unsuccessful attempt to introduce 1470 to a mate, it communicated the following statement to researchers. "I went at the bloody harlot, waving me arms around to let her know what's what, but she wasn't having none of it. She smacked her lips at me and gave me a good drumming with her arms and legs, and I know it was because of that hideous red stripe you asked to put on me arse. It really makes a fellow stand out in ways he's not supposed to, you know? Those savages might not notice it much, but you can't fool a proper lady. So anyway, I had to tie a bungee and make a jump for it, before sailing back to me tent to nurse me pride." Many of the terms used were simply automatically translated to make sense to a human listener. Afterwards, the red stripe that was put on the spider to help identify it was removed, and a less mature female spider was introduced into its terrarium. When a researcher came by to inquire, 1470 told him to not be so loud, as he'll wake the little Sheila. It says that she was pretty scared when she got tossed out here by those big predators, but he's not completely sure, as she can't talk like they can talk. None of them ever can, but she cares in her own way. She asked him back to her place, and they're going to stay there until she's ready. The researcher asks it, ready for what? To which it says that it can't be a gentleman if they talk about it so plainly, not like humans do. It guesses that it should say thank you, as it's not what it wanted, but it will do. The researcher replies that it told him it wanted a mate, to which 1470 says that it said it wanted a wife, as a mate is a friend, like they are. Mates are fun to talk to, but it wanted someone it could look in the eyes while it talked to them. The researcher tells it that they have never found anyone else that can talk like it does, and 1470 says that that's what separates them from the savages, the other spiders. It would never eat something that can talk, and although the female can't talk, it can tell that she's like it, and she just needs to grow up some. That will be very soon, and they'll have good children, if that big old harlot keeps her distance. The researcher replies that they removed her from the area, and it says that it hopes they didn't hurt her. The female reached maturity within the next 2 weeks, and 1470 left the web after copulating. As is normal for the species, the female did not devour or kill 1470. Sometime later, 1470 calls out to the researcher, who says that they were just doing some work on its enclosure. It says that it doesn't see him inside of the enclosure, to which the researcher says that he's outside of it. The spider responds that it doesn't have an outside, and how come it can't get outside? The researcher asks it if it sees his arm waving, and the response he gets from the spider is unintelligible, with wordless dread being the most apt description of what he felt. Its species has excellent vision, but at a very short range, and it apparently never realized that what it was speaking to was so big, asking how anything could be so big. It refuses to communicate then for 2 hours, as the researcher tries to coax it into conversation again. Eventually, it apologizes and says that it thought he was another spider, but wanted to stay hidden because it's kind of the king of the jungle around here. Or so it thought. It asks what he is, and the researcher replies that he doesn't have any answers that will make sense to it, and he's been scared as well by things that are as big to him as he is to it. 1470 says that the children won't talk to him, but the ones that lived are doing all right, although that probably isn't important to someone like him, though. The researcher tells him that it will be his job to watch them, and they're hoping they can talk like it can. The spider also hopes for that, but says that it's pretty tired and itchy now, and wants to change its coat, but it can't. It apologizes again and says that it was nice to talk to someone while it lasted. 1470 lived for a total of 3 months in Foundation custody before perishing of natural causes. And so far, there's been no evidence that its children can communicate telepathically. Definitely a bit of a sad article, but that's the way of things. Next, we have SCP-1006, a collection of intelligent spiders that have achieved sapience through unknown means, and have established a rudimentary system of government resembling Marxist communism. The original mass of spiders was discovered by a hiking couple, who alerted park authorities. After the discovery of written propaganda inside of the central web, along with evidence of usage of extremely simple tools, webs resembling faces of passers-by, and simple attempts to block off the area via fallen branches, the Foundation intervened. The colony is currently located in a cluster of black oak trees, within a massive and complex central web, and several secondary webs, all of which appear to be very well maintained, with damage being constantly repaired. The surrounding area has a nauseating odor due to the presence of thousands of dead insects, dead spiders, and an occasional dead bird or small animal. Some members of the spider community maintain the web, while others are apparently chosen to maintain the agenda of the whole. Once supplied a source of black ink and poster sheets, the community will communicate with humans by creating signs written in English. These signs are largely centered around demands for the dismantling of Western imperialism, a scathing critique of the bourgeoisie, and a request for less mosquito spraying in the surrounding area of the park. The head of the colony is a large spider resembling a wolf spider, taking up refuge in the largest tree of the cluster. This entity views the outside world as something that belonged to them, and is merely being maintained by the bourgeois humanoids, and it has given its name as Benevolent Leader. Close studies have discovered that the members of the colony utilize a central collective think tank that passes on the ideas of the Benevolent Leader to the others through complex frequencies in the web. The skeletal remains of a male human were found in an area of the web, surrounded by dead insects and a variety of small, shiny objects, such as bottle caps and pebbles, along with the occasional pocket watch and bits of metal in apparent reverence. The colony does not allow this skeleton to be disturbed, but passive analysis indicates that the individual died decades prior from blunt trauma to the back of the head. Identification, located near the body, identifies him as a known political radical, reported missing from a nearby town in 1976. So, obviously, this one is a play on arachno-communism, itself a parody of anarcho-communism. So far, we've looked at some pretty peaceful and relatively nice spiders, but let's get into some of the more horrific stuff. SCP-3023 is a phenomenon in which an object will abruptly develop an arachnoid form and gain motility in the presence of humans. This phenomenon has so far only occurred in a well-defined region of central Germany, and occurs on an irregular basis, with an average of 2 months between occurrences. The entities will behave erratically, generally moving around their vicinity at random and using their legs and pincers to attack anything they come into contact with. They display speed, durability, and physical strength far in excess of what their structure and composition should allow, but destruction or dismemberment of the object is sufficient to cause the anomalous properties to cease. We're provided an abridged list of entities, starting with a baseball that ripped apart to produce 8 pointed legs surrounding a central mass. Reportedly, it animated mid-pitch, and upon impact with the catcher's mitt, it attacked the catcher. After killing them, it remained on the field for 84 minutes before being destroyed by civilians. Another was a metal folding chair, in which its legs and other tubular segments functioned as spider legs, with the seat and back operating as a central mass. It animated in an abandoned office building in the presence of several urban explorers, who managed to capture a brief amount of footage of it killing 2 of the explorers. Later, a telephone animated, although no living witnesses could provide a description of the anomaly, and an MTF destroyed it remotely via explosives after 4 hours and 2 Foundation casualties. We'll get some more details about this one a little later. The smallest recorded instance of 3023 was a gelatin capsule containing ibuprofen, which simply developed an arachnoid shape while maintaining structural integrity. It managed to kill a single individual while animated, with evidence suggesting that it animated while inside of their throat, exiting through their spinal cord. The largest instance thus far was an animated Mercedes-Benz SUV, with the front and rear of the vehicle forming into a distinct cephalothorax and abdomen, respectively, with limbs formed from deformed auto parts. It became animate while traveling at 72 kilometers per hour, and was shown capable of maintaining this speed after transformation. The vehicle's occupants are believed to have died during the transformation, and the resultant automobile accidents led to 41 casualties. It was ultimately destroyed via airstrike when it became apparent that the MTF sent lacked the ability to properly contain it. Lastly, a human corpse found on the side of a road by police suddenly animated, with its skeletal system being radically reorganized, allowing 4 additional limbs made of bone to emerge from its abdomen. This resulted in 6 casualties, until a civilian was able to temporarily disable it by running it over with an ambulance. The corpse had not been identified prior to animation. No match for the recovered genetic material was found, and no cause of death was readily apparent. Security footage from the day prior to that transformed telephone's activation showed an individual breaking a window to enter the office in which it was located. When he had acquired the telephone, his jaw distended and then split open horizontally as 4 dark, tongue-like appendages extended from his mouth, and proceeded to rub the telephone for 36 seconds. After closing his mouth, the individual returned the phone to its location and exited the premises. Forensic evidence has conclusively identified the man as a local restaurateur, but he has denied any memory of the event or knowledge of his observed properties, and thorough examination of his body has failed to identify any anatomical abnormalities. There's no evidence that he has been in contact with any other instance of transformed objects, and he has displayed no anomalous properties since his detainment. Certainly a bit of a classic SCP, with no explanation of why these things are happening or why they're happening in this local region specifically.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
SCP-940 is a parasitoid organism with some superficial similarities to certain spiders. Adult specimens are highly agile and possess leg spans from 4 to 7 meters, or 13 to 23 feet, although due to the difficulty in separating 940 from their hosts, their average weight and body size are unimportant. Each of their 8 translucent legs is dotted regularly with 6 types of specialized sensory organs, including 2 of indeterminate function, and they end in large tarsal claws, allowing them to climb sheer vertical surfaces with ease. They also possess a radial nerve net, similar to the common starfish, and no central nervous system. It's possible that 940 rely on their host's brain power for processing of external stimuli. Infection from 940 occurs following exposure to body fluids containing their eggs and larvae, and were provided a chart showcasing their life cycle. After initial exposure, eggs and larvae begin to reproduce throughout the host's blood. The larvae are the only stage of 940's life cycle, with many of the organ systems necessary for survival prior to integration with a host. Once the first larvae hatch, they will begin cannibalizing any unhatched eggs, and then each other, in order to ensure that only one larva develops into an adult. There have been cases of as many as 5 larvae reaching maturity within a single host, although this is rare. Hosts at this stage will often complain of abdominal and chest pains, and treatment with intravenous antiparasitic compound is possible if administered before this point. The remaining 940 larvae will then migrate to the chest cavity, typically attaching to a major artery, the heart, or spinal cord. It will position itself with its legs oriented towards the host's back, and its internal organ systems will begin atrophying. Their carapace will then break down, although their legs remain intact. Their circulatory system will conjoin with that of the host, along with its nervous system to a lesser extent. The larva begins producing a number of enzymes which cause the host's body to increase production of a number of hormones, including human growth hormone. The earlier abdominal and chest pains subside, but the host instead starts to experience an increase in appetite and general listlessness. Approximately 3 weeks after initial infection, 940 begins to alter serotonin and dopamine levels in the host's brain, causing them to experience feelings of happiness and well-being. The legs of the larva, now supplied blood and nutrients by the host, begin to penetrate the host's skin on their back. Hosts typically do not report any discomfort or alarm at this stage, and rarely seek treatment. Around 5 weeks after initial infection, the 940 specimen reaches full size and maturity, although hosts remain secretive about their condition. A form of communication is believed to occur between the specimen and its host, such as hosts displaying a vague awareness of things occurring behind them. The specimen will often retract their legs, folding them flat against the host's back and allowing them to be easily concealed by clothing. Additionally, the specimen triggers an increase in the levels of testosterone in the host's body, leading to increased libido. And since infection with other hosts is facilitated through bodily fluids, this is usually accomplished via coitus. All infected individuals that survive 6 weeks of infection are considered to be in stage 7, where they report the loss of a sense of individuality, gradual clouding of the eyes leading to near total blindness, and bouts of catatonia and catalepsy. Death is typically due to an aneurysm caused by skyrocketing blood pressure, heart or kidney failure, or exsanguination. Infected individuals at this stage can be identified by the strange choking sound they make as they attempt to draw in more oxygen than is possible. When the host dies, 940 will continue to animate the corpse using its limbs, entering a berserk state in which it will attempt to reproduce and infect with no regard for concealment, generally inflicting physical violence and blood transmission to do so. This state can last from 1 to 3 days before the specimen expires. Stage 6 and above specimens, when not attempting to conceal their identities, are extremely agile and capable predators, and through the use of their powerful limbs and multiple sensory organs, they are highly adept at evading capture. Field agents are to be highly cautious and equipped with protective gear at all times to prevent infection, and issued nerve gas grenades for suppression purposes. An incident occurred when an assistant researcher failed to return a live sample to cold storage, allowing it to remain unattended in the lab for 45 minutes while on lunch break. The resulting breach of containment resulted in 7 infections amongst research and security personnel, and another 5 in D-class personnel. The affected wing of Area 14 was isolated for decontamination, and the Foundation personnel were administered intravenous antiparasitic compound and fully recovered, but the D-class were isolated for observation and research. 3 of the subjects formed the basis for the infection's life cycle as documented, while one of them had multiple larvae reach maturity. They were terminated 3 weeks into the process, when the accelerated symptoms resulted in her progression to stage 7, completely bypassing stages 5 and 6. Another D-class was initially believed to be uninfected, displaying no symptoms, but a full examination found her to be pregnant, with the unborn fetus being infected. The fetus was allowed to mature, with the D-class being kept unaware of its condition. Both expired, however, when the legs of the specimen penetrated the D-class's uterus, and the fetus is now kept in cryogenic storage for study. Certainly one of the more horrific SCPs we've read about. Finally, let's end with SCP-5683, which begins with a message from 057 to a Dr. Christensen, congratulating him on his success with the Doomsday Project. They are still looking for an appropriate candidate for director of Site-04, and his name has come up, but the council still wants him to prove himself a little more before they make their final decision. They want him to solve the 5683 problem. SCP-5683 is a large arachnid organism capable of rapid regeneration and bodily modification. It is extremely hostile to all human life, and will constantly attempt to breach containment in order to engage in mass slaughter, usually by injecting venom using its mandibles and impaling victims with its legs. Although it has demonstrated the capability for basic reasoning and planning when hunting prey, it is not believed to possess human-level intelligence. When placed into a threatening situation, it will quickly adapt in order to become more resistant to whatever form of danger is being posed to it, and these adaptations will persist until the danger is no longer present. Due to frequent containment breaches and the increasing drain on Foundation resources, a termination order was issued, with it being overseen by Dr. Christensen. The initial deliberations begin, with Christensen in high spirits, and he asks the team that's been working with 5683 if there's anything he should know about it. The team hesitates until one researcher says that it's smarter than it looks, and if it spots a way to escape, it'll take it in an instant. Christensen sighs and says that he expected more, but for now they're going to do some basic stress tests, starting on some tissue samples before moving on to the creature itself. There's no point getting complicated if they can just kill it with fire. They test high-temperature incineration on the sample first, which destroys it successfully, but when testing it on the creature, it thrashes and screeches for 30 seconds before developing armor plating covered with an unknown substance that prevents combustion. In another meeting, a junior researcher, Silva, says that the test went as expected, unfortunately, to which Christensen says that he hopes they didn't think he seriously believed it would work. It was just to establish a baseline. He's contacted the O5 Council and requested the use of some anomalous substances to aid with termination. Not anomalous enough to qualify for containment, but anomalous enough to help them out here. Silva asks about the specific substances for logging purposes, and Christensen says it's Y220, Y835, and Y436. He expects each would be enough to do the job, but it's best to hedge the bets. He remarks that this spider doesn't compare to the lizard, causing Silva to smile and ask when he worked with the lizard. Christensen loses a bit of his enthusiasm and says that it was a few years back and they had a containment breach. It wasn't pleasant, and he moves on, telling Silva to get the info logged. The other researchers in the room remark on the fantastic work. Y220 is tested on a sample, converting it to glass before it violently explodes, but when tested on the creature, only 80% of its body converts to glass before exploding. Within 30 seconds, the creature had fully regenerated. With Y835, the sample split into two independent organisms, which then proceeded to kill each other through mutual injection of venom. Despite this seeming like a really terrible idea, they used the substance on the creature itself, causing it to split into two entities, which then injected each other with venom. One died near instantly, but the other adapted an immunity to the venom and survived, proceeding to consume the other to regain lost mass. With Y436, the sample was reduced to a fine mist upon exposure, and the creature itself was also reduced to a fine mist, but all of the lights in the facility turned off. When they reactivated 3 seconds later, the creature had fully regenerated. In another meeting, Christensen kicks his chair in anger, losing all of the high spirits he came in with originally. He yells that the file says the creature adapts, but coming back to life when the lights turn out is not an adaptation. It's just magic BS. Silva tries to get him to calm down, which he eventually does, and says that he's requisitioning Y910. The other researchers ask if he's sure about it, to which Christensen says that he is, because if the GOC can use it to poison gods, surely it can take care of one giant spider. He's also ditching the tissue sample test, because the O5s are choosing the director of Site 04 soon, and he's not going to sit around wasting time. He'll take full responsibility for the decision, should anything go wrong, which Silva seems very pleased to hear, and Christensen tells the others to start preparations, walking out of the room as the sound of laughter is heard. The log for the Y910 test simply says, "Energizing response," and "Containment breach in progress." Christensen and Silva run into the secure bunker as Christensen seals the door behind them. He repeats that this isn't happening before smelling something and complaining about the stench, something that has been mentioned multiple times now and has been blamed on an accident in the cafeteria. Silva says that the creature must have gotten to the reactor and it's all his fault. Christensen stands and yells, asking him what he did, to which he says that it's his job to oppose actions that he believes are ill-advised, and he didn't do that for Christensen. Christensen says yes, and asks if he knows how many people have died because he couldn't do his job, because he refused to. Silva starts crying, and apologizes again, saying that he's the one who wanted to use Y910 and wouldn't listen. Christensen pauses and asks if he's trying to make him his scapegoat, which Silva denies, but says that there are procedures for a reason. Christensen tells him that when they get out of here, he's going to tell the council the truth about what happened here and what Silva has done. Silva says, however, that he doesn't think that will be possible, as this chamber isn't nearly strong enough to survive the reactor overloading. He says that he shouldn't have led them here, which Christensen agrees with, but then says that with due respect, he must admit some personal responsibility. Christensen turns to him and starts screaming for him to shut up about whose fault this is, as a loud banging sound is heard against the bunker door. It bursts open, revealing SCP-5683, and Silva stands in front of it, telling Christensen to run. Christensen pushes Silva towards the giant spider and prepares to run, but the spider disappears, and Silva turns to him. He remarks on how disappointing this is, and the other researchers enter the room. Christensen asks what happened to 5683, to which Silva says that there's little reason in keeping a dummy around once it's served its purpose, as a substitute. Christensen is obviously extremely confused, and Silva says that he mentioned working with a lizard, and there was a containment breach, but asks him how he escaped that situation, as it seemed quite lethal. Christensen pauses and asks where he is, to which the other researchers tell him not to ask questions that he knows the answer to. He asks them who they are, and Silva says that they are the jury, his jury, and he's afraid that Christensen has disgraced himself quite horribly once again. Christensen asks how long he's been here, to which Silva says a considerable amount of time, and then he asks how much longer he'll be here. Silva tells him that he'll be here until he takes responsibility. Christensen moves into the corner of the room, shaking, and says that this is his fault, but the researchers remark that he says it, but he doesn't mean it. Christensen begs and apologizes before running towards the door. Before he can reach it, however, a black iron chain appears and wraps itself around his throat, pulling him out the door and around the corner at extremely high speeds. It proceeds to drag him out of the complex, slamming him into walls as he yells that it's not his fault. The floor and walls drop away, revealing what is behind them. There is a great deal of blood, and fire, and suffering, along with a terrible stench. There is laughter, and Christensen begins screaming, never really stopping. The article ends with another message from 057 to Dr. Christensen, identical to the first one, except the number at the bottom has increased by one, to 22,122,593. So, Christensen is obviously in some form of hell, clearly for his actions during a containment breach involving SCP-682, the lizard, that presumably got a number of people killed. He's not being eternally punished for getting some people killed, however, he's being punished for not taking responsibility. His punishment is now a perpetual loop of a very similar anomaly, a spider instead of a lizard, and his memory is wiped each time, with the hope that one day he'll realize the error of his ways and take responsibility. It does seem that the entities involved actually want him to do so, as Silva was notably happy when Christensen said earlier that he would take responsibility if anything went wrong, and then disappointed when he didn't. How exactly the Foundation has transcripts of all this is unknown, as is the nature of this hell, but there's a thought that the Three Moons Initiative might be involved, as they are often responsible for rewarding and punishing the deceased in their afterlife. For some people, there's not much in life more terrifying and unsettling than a spider, even if they know that, in reality, any given spider might pose absolutely no threat to them. Including spiders in a piece of horror fiction is therefore a pretty easy way to ramp up the tension for many people, and there are certainly plenty of people that will refuse to even watch this video due to the subject matter. It's no surprise that there's quite a few articles on the SCP wiki containing spiders. And while horrific articles like SCP-940 are the type of thing you'd expect to find, it's nice to see that there's others that are more strange or even heartwarming. It's probably not much comfort to the average arachnophobe, though, that, at least in real life, spiders can't nest inside of you and sprout their legs out of your back.